It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bayerano.
Welcome to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I am your host, Nick Bayerano. Joining us on the show today is the president of the Institute for Fitness and Health, Joe Piscatella. Joe is a nationally recognized speaker who has spoken to over 2 million people. He is the author of 17 best-selling books, has hosted 3 PBS TV specials on heart health, is a guest expert on WebMD, has served as the only non-medical member of the National Institute of Health expert panel on cardiac rehabilitation, and the list goes on and on. If you have any questions, give us a call today at 541-567-6500. Joe, welcome to the show.
Well, Nick, I'm just pleased to be with you this morning, and I'm looking forward to coming down on the 24th of this month to speak to the public and to your health professionals. So thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Just from the introduction, I can see that you are a man that has been dedicated to helping others improve their health. How did this all get started for you?
Well, some smart guy years ago said if you want to have good health, contract a chronic disease and then take care of it. And, you know, in a kind of a backward way, it makes sense. But I have been interested in lifestyle habits and heart health since 1977, when at age 32 I went through bypass surgery. It was a shock for me and for my family. I was playing tennis and got a little pulling sensation in the middle of my chest, and I went back the next day to play and got a pulling sensation, and the next day. The upshot was I played tennis for 30 consecutive days. And on the 30th, I no longer had a little pulling sensation. I had a kind of a giant white-hot pain, and I couldn't catch my breath. So I went to see my family physician, where I had been 4 months earlier for a complete physical that had been perfect. Only this time, it wasn't perfect. He felt strongly enough about the results that he closed his practice for the rest of the day and drove me to see a cardiologist. We did an external exam, did an internal exam. 2 days later, I was in bypass surgery for a 95% blockage of the left main coronary artery. My children were 6 and 4. I mean, we just didn't know what hit us. And the prognosis was not very good. I actually had one doctor say to me, you know, don't worry about lifestyle habits like diet and exercise and stress management, because frankly, we don't think you're going to live to be 40.
Wow.
We didn't accept that prognosis, and instead really put ourselves wholeheartedly into eating healthier, staying away from secondhand smoke, exercising regularly, and managing stress. And I am now 41 years post bypass surgery. The Heart Association thinks I'm certainly one of the longest, maybe the longest-lived survivor of bypass surgery in the country. I did not change my parents. I changed my lifestyle, and that's what has interested me in the books and talks and what I'm going to speak about when I come to Hermiston.
Awesome. Well, it sounds pretty amazing. You chose not to suffer in silence, but you actually did something about it. How many Americans suffer from the same condition each year?
Well, there are a lot. I mean, we have 1 in a million, million and a half heart attacks every year, 600,000, 800,000 deaths.
Wow.
Over half of them now are women. And so the interesting thing to me about it is that we are not genetically penalized as a nation. This is really a question of how we have chosen to live. In fact, I had a conversation with the Dr. Bill Roberts, who's the editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Cardiology, and he said for every one person that has a heart attack because of bad genes, 499 have a heart attack because of knives and forks. So when you look at the American way of life, We are a sedentary people, as much as we'd like to think we exercise. When you look at the data, we really don't. Our diet is still, they published a study yesterday that showed one-third of all Americans eat fast food every day. We are a completely stressed-out population because everybody's out of time. Mm. So when you roll those all together, you end up not just with a contribution to the heart disease numbers, but to Alzheimer's and high blood pressure and cancer data. All of those are related to the way that we've chosen to live. So the message I want to carry in is that this is important. It also is something that can be managed without turning your life upside down. And we want to, you know, talk about some tips as to how you do that.
So that brings up a great question. So your family as a unit decided to, you know, help you change your lifestyle. And it seems like that's not an easy task for most people to do, even after they have been diagnosed with this kind of condition or have had a surgery. How did you and your family actually get past that? Well, you know, obviously your doctor said, you know, there's not much you can do. How did you get past that and actually decide to change your lifestyle?
Well, it was helpful that my children were so young. I mean, they were ages 6 and 4. And so, you know, running into future problems, particularly at an early age, was not something that I wanted to have happen. I mean, who was going to pay for their college? Who was going to raise them? Who were going to do those things? So in some respects, because I was young and my wife was young, it was easier for us to make that commitment. But whatever age you are, you have to kind of find out what is the motivating force. Do you want to be healthy enough to run and play with your grandchildren? Do you want to be healthy enough to, you know, have good health for as long as you're alive? I think that those are basic questions, and when you answer those questions, then you're able to set your priorities. And it was not, you know, we made the same mistakes that a lot of people made in trying to change our diet until we finally got the hang of it. Mm. But it's what I call focus repetition. You keep doing the right thing until it becomes just natural.
Repetition. I like that, focus repetition. It's almost like you make it become habitual. It's a habit after a while, rather than just something that you do occasionally.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, I'm a guy that exercises 6 days a week. And, you know, so to me it's become so familiar. I get up, brush my teeth, put on my running shoes, and that's the first thing I do in the morning. Now, I'm calling you today from Upper New York State, just outside of Rochester, where I'll be speaking today. Well, you know, it's a 3-hour time change. I flew in yesterday. I wasn't wild about getting up at 6 o'clock this morning to go take a jog, but I did it. And because of that focused repetition, I'm just so used to doing it, it would feel strange not to do it. Hmm. And it's the same thing with, you know, what are you going to have for breakfast? How are you going to manage your stress today? You know, how are you going to choose to live your life? I mean, we're in charge. We can do, you know, whatever it is that we want to do. It just sometimes takes some help in making those decisions and then taking the action.
So let's talk a little bit about prevention. Obviously, you know, there's two groups of people. People that have not been diagnosed with a condition of cardiovascular disease or have no cardiovascular health problems, similar to what you stated when you went to the doctor the first time 4 months before you actually mm-hmm. started having a condition. What can people do to be proactive and help prevent cardiovascular disease from even coming on? Because as you said, it's not necessarily something that might be hereditary. It could be prevented.
Right. Well, it's actually the same thing that you do in rehabilitation. Take care of your diet, eat a healthy diet, exercise on a regular basis, and we're not talking about running marathons. We're talking about taking a 45-minute walk, staying away from cigarette smoke and not smoking yourself, and then managing stress, which is rapidly becoming perhaps the most important piece of that puzzle. So it's if I had done for prevention what I learned to do for rehabilitation, I wouldn't have needed rehabilitation. I mean, that's the what people are instructed to do after they have coronary disease is just what they should be doing to ward off that coronary disease. It's kind of interesting. I spoke to a gentleman the other day, and he tells me, it's a Monday, he said, I have no time to exercise. I'm a very busy businessman. I'm running an organization. I have no time to exercise. On a Tuesday, he has a heart attack. Guess what? On a Wednesday, he's found time to exercise. So it's all really kind of a question of perspective. There used to be that old Fram filter ad that said, pay me now or pay me later. So, you know, you can exercise now for prevention and have a long life with longevity and a lot of years of good health, or you can ignore it, have yourself a cardiovascular event, and then have to exercise for rehabilitation. But it's never as satisfying as when it's done for prevention.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, you know, the standard American diet, because back when you had your episode, you had told me privately in a previous conversation that you were primarily following that diet and, you know, you were getting exercise, but still you still ended up with cardiovascular disease. So how do people, you know, I guess get beyond just what is the status quo, because I think that's kind of prohibitive. They just don't know what to do or what to eat. How do they change that, or where would you suggest they actually start?
Well, I always suggest that we start with exercise, because adding exercise to your life is much easier than trying to change the foods in your life.
Okay.
Making dietary changes is hard. The other thing is that it's easy to become successful with exercise. You can say to yourself, you know, for the next 2 months, I am going to walk 45 minutes a day, 5 to 6 days a week. That's easily accomplished. And so when you do accomplish it, you feel successful. You feel like you've won in the Olympics. And so you can use that as a platform of success to then start to make changes in your dietary lifestyle. The key with the dietary lifestyle is don't get hung up on one thing. I mean, we went through the fat mania. Now we're going through the sugar mania. The point, I'm a big believer in the Mediterranean diet, which is a middle-of-the-road diet. It does include some red meat and, of course, fish and vegetables and fruits and all of the good stuff. But you make small changes that ultimately add up to be large changes. I'm a big believer in the power of small steps. I don't think you go from, you know, the typical American diet to being a vegan in 3 or 4 days. I think you can make small adjustments that will allow you to have an eating pattern that is tasty, easy to do, doesn't kill your checkbook, and from a cardiovascular standpoint is very helpful and help in managing your blood pressure and your cholesterol and the other risk factors. So that's the way I approach it. I think the fly in the ointment for us these days, because we do know a lot about exercise and we do know a lot about diet, is the impact of chronic stress on dietary and exercise compliance. What we're seeing in the U.S. now is that there are quite a few people who have become nutritionally literate. They understand the difference between an apple and a piece of apple pie, for example. I mean, we really have come to understand the food pyramid and the my plate. But, you know, when you're stressed out because you're out of time, then M&Ms become lunch. No matter what you know about healthy eating. So we are now factoring in stress management as one of the smartest things that people can do to help overcome the barrier that you're talking about, which is putting the inability to put the information to work. So when I come down and speak later in the month at Good Shepherd, I'm really going to zero in on the role that chronic stress plays in living a healthy lifestyle.
All right, you're listening to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System, and joining us on the show today is national best-selling author, speaker, and president of the Institute for Fitness and Health, Joe Piscatella. If you have a question for us, give us a call at 541-567-6500. So, Joe, you touched on something just a little bit ago, and I kind of wanted to go a little bit more deeply into that. So you mentioned a little bit about stress and playing a role in health. So how does stress actually affect somebody's health and potential for changing their lifestyle?
Well, the first and foremost, it can corrupt your plans for exercise, and it can keep you from eating a healthy diet. So those are the two things. When we look at why, if people know so much about diet and exercise, why they are not eating healthy and exercising regularly, what we're finding in studies is that for many of the folks, chronic stress gets in the way. But we also know that some people that are under chronic stress run higher levels of cholesterol when they are stressed, regardless of what they're eating. There's a wonderful study on CPA, Certified Public Accountants, where they drew their blood and tested for cholesterol on April 15th, tax deadline day, and on August 15th when they were at the beach on vacation. There was almost a 100-point difference in the cholesterol readings, and there was no change in diet.
Wow.
Stress had driven the cholesterol number up. We know that there are literally thousands of people that have high blood pressure primarily because of chronic stress. They're called hot reactors. And we know that some people have heart attacks and die when there is no cholesterol blockage in the blood vessel system, and that's a result of chronic stress. It's called sudden cardiac death. And so there are some really bad things that can come about when stress goes unbridled, and it can wreck your attempt at living a healthy lifestyle and can have some cardiovascular risks that are enormous.
So, Joe, just kind of a follow-up to that, how do you and your organization actually work with your clients to help them manage their stress or understand if they are actually experiencing stress that they might not even know about?
Well, if they're living in the United States and they are feeling chronically out of time, they are under stress, and some of these things are happening to them, and when we help them take a look at it, they can see that. We generally look to the source of stress in two areas. One is external, otherwise known as significant life events, birth, death, marriage, divorce, moves to a new home, changes in financial position. Death of a spouse is the single most stressful act that will happen in our lives. So if you have too many of those big-ticket things going on and too brief a period of time, then statistically you're at risk for all kinds of diseases and debilitating conditions, but particularly for cardiovascular, and that's because of the stress that's built up with these external factors. There's also an internal factor, which in the U.S. is enormous, and it's called type A personality. Mm. We're the guys that have what you call hurry sickness. We're doers. We get things done. The country, the family, the business would not move forward without type A's. But we pay a price because we treat everything as if there's a deadline and that we need to do more and more in less and less time. And so type A personality, which impacts the majority of Americans, is an internal producer of stress. I think what's important for people to understand, and what I'm going to bang home when I come down to talk, is that there's no such thing as stress reduction. I'm not going to be able to teach anybody on the 24th how to get up on the 25th and have less stress in their life. I mean, life in the U.S. is filled with stress. What I am going to teach people is how do you manage that stress. That becomes the key, not reducing it, but managing it successfully. how do you handle it efficiently and effectively? That's open for all of us, and that makes a lot more sense than trying to figure out how you reduce stress, because that ain't going to happen.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more of what you have to say on the 24th for sure, and I know that our community will be excited to learn more about it as well. Joe, something else I want to talk to you about is I understand that you run a six-week program on health for communities. Can you tell us a little bit about what that program actually is and what that does?
Yes, it's called 6 Weeks to a Healthier You, and I go into a community and spend one night a week for six consecutive weeks. People sign up for it and come. And each week we take on a different topic, like healthy eating. We do a class on healthy cooking, stress management, effective exercise, where we teach people about core exercise to go along with walking. And we even have one session on raising fit kids, because that's becoming such a problem in the U.S., either your own kids or your grandkids. We've had tremendous success with it. We've done it in Michigan, California, Nevada, and all over Washington. I had one program not too long ago in Michigan where we had 650 people lose 4,200 pounds.
Wow!
So it's, you know, if you're I love to come in and do programs like I'm going to do for you. They're really educational programs, but when you're there for, you know, one day, you don't get a chance to really work with people over a period of time. We chose 6 weeks for two reasons. One is it's short enough so that people will stick with it. You know, if you do a six-month program, you get a lot of people that fall away. For 6 weeks, you can hold your breath for 6 weeks, so they'll do that. The second reason is all the data show that you can change a habit in 6 weeks. You can establish a healthy habit in 6 weeks. So, again, we concentrate on focused repetition. You know, we have people doing things over and over and over again, and then always adding something on top of it until by the time they end up at the end of the 6 weeks, they're doing things like eating oatmeal for breakfast and walking 45 minutes a day quite naturally. I mean, we don't even have to remind them. It is now part of their lifestyle. That's when you can really see changes.
So I want to talk to you a little bit more about that as far as, you know, we've talked about stress. Now, how do you actually get people motivated? You know, the average American now is on the couch. They're watching TV. They're on their computer, social media. How do you do it?
Well, we do it by getting them to make some changes that where there are some measurable results. You know, if a person loses even something as little as 5 pounds, if a person drops his glucose to the extent that he can be taken off a diabetes medication, if a person has his LDL cholesterol go down by 10%, those are all motivating factors. I think nothing breeds success like success. So we're always working with people and organizations to see if we can't get those little markers in place. And then people become self-motivating for that. We do a lot of motivation as part of the six-week program, and also, you know, I will be attempting to motivate people when I come down and do the talks for you, because I think it's important that people find a reason for doing the right thing with regards to their health. You know, life is not a dress rehearsal. We only get to go through one time. So we can either make changes that put us on the road to health, or we can have a lifestyle that puts us on the road to disaster. So we want people to really understand reasons why they want to do the good health route. For me, it was in some ways easier because, you know, I was facing bypass surgery. I had young children. I hadn't been married to my wife 10 years. At that point, my new business was 3 years old. My new house was 1 year old. I mean, I had plenty of reasons to say, okay, let's do this right. It's a little bit different for people that perhaps are older than I was at the time. But there's plenty of reasons for wanting to live healthy and to really have as many healthy years as you can get out of this life. And so that should be motivation enough to get you going in the right direction. Then the success with what you're doing is what keeps you going.
So just so our community kind of understands the importance of this too, I thought I should share some statistics from our community health needs assessment that was conducted back in 2015.
Yeah.
So in 2014, cardiovascular disease was the second highest leading cause of death in both Umatilla and Morrow counties, which is two counties that Good Shepherd Healthcare System actually serves here in Eastern Oregon. And in the state of Oregon, it was the second leading cause of death as well behind cancer, and it was behind cancer in both of our counties here as well, Umatilla and Morrow County. So I just think that is a good point, which you've just shared with us as far as how we get motivated, how we can help ourselves reduce stress, changing our lifestyle. All of those things are important. So let's say if you take a typical American family, how would you encourage them to live a healthy lifestyle?
Well, it's got to start with the parents for a couple of reasons. They set the tone in the family. And they're also the role models. You know, kids are amazing. They don't do what you tell them to do. They do what you do. So the first thing I think you have to do is take a look at your lifestyle in terms of cardiovascular risk factors. Are you, what's your diet look like? You know, are you one of the guys that has fast food every single day? You know, is weight a problem because your second helpings are, you know, typical in the U.S., we skip dinner or we skip breakfast or have a Danish pastry. We skip lunch, and then we come home and eat two or three dinners and then go to bed. So you take a look at, you know, what's my dietary pattern, and you ask the question, the same with exercise. I mean, can I get started on a walking program? If you haven't been doing anything, you get checked out, make sure your doc says that you're able to do this, and then you don't start with 45 minutes or an hour walk. You start with a 15-minute or, you know, 20-minute walk at a moderate pace, and then you build on that. And it's the same thing with, you know, with stress. You have to kind of identify what are the stressors in my life, and then there are some techniques that we're going to talk about, you know, deep breathing and every day you exercise is a day you, that you're doing something about stress management. So it's all interwoven together. And the biggest thing is to create a positive mindset that says, I'm going to make a commitment to living a healthy lifestyle, and I'm going to do it with small steps. As I say, I think there's great power in small steps. You don't have to, you know, go from a lazy boy rocker on a Monday to a marathon on a Friday. That isn't going to happen, and in fact would be discouraging. But you can make progress with small bites.
Great, Joe. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing you here on October 24th. So again, you're listening to Good Health on KOHU, and joining me today it was Joe Piscatella, author, speaker, and president of the Institute for Health and Fitness. Joe will be in Hermiston in person for the Good Shepherd Healthcare System first annual community meeting on Wednesday, October 24th at the Hermiston Community Center. And everyone in our community is invited to come and hear Joe and to also take part in a mini health fair that will be going on that day as well. The event is free and open to anyone that would like to join us. Doors open at 5 p.m. For more information and to RSVP, call 541-667-3509. Again, that is 541-667-3509. Joe, I want to thank you again for being on the show today.
My pleasure, Nick. I look forward to seeing you later in the month.
On my first patrol, my adrenaline was pumping.
Always on high alert. After a while, it takes a toll. I was counting the days to